Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Programme for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our programme is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the program. Once again, it's lovely to have you with us. And we start today with a question. Then after that, we'll talk about women working on the front line. And the first one is we're going to have one of Maitreya's messages. And what does he ask of us? And it's by Patricia Pichon. From 6th of September 1977 until 27 May 1982, that's a period of about 5 years, Benjamin Krim received a total of 140 messages from Maitreya during his weekly lectures at Friends House in London through a process of mental overshadowing. Too often we ask much of spiritual teachers and guides, or of whatever divine power we may believe in, but how often do we think of and implement, however imperfectly, what is asked of us? Our excuses to ourselves range from, that is too difficult, why should I even try, to, oh yes, I will try that sometime, and then the intention slips away.
Maitreya's messages have some unique characteristics. Each one has a certain declamatory style, full of gravitas. Yet there is often a direct, almost intimate approach and a simplicity entirely devoid of pomposity. In his first message, Maitreya addresses people as my brothers and sisters, and also as my children and friends. He also tells us, my manifestation is complete and accomplished. I am, verily, in the world. He adds, but there is much to do, much that needs changing in the world. Many hunger and die, many suffer needlessly. And further, I come to change all that, to show you the way forward, into a simpler, saner, happier life, together. No longer man against man, nation against nation. But together, as brothers, shall we go forth into the new country.
In his second message, he speaks of food which lies rotting in the storehouses of the world, and he offers his help to us as teacher, protector, friend, and guide. Here also, Maitreya announces that the masters who work with him, the masters of wisdom, are also among us, and he asks us directly, help them in their work. He explains, know too that they are building the new age through you. However, this does not happen by itself. When even a few gather together and begin to work for others, motivated by service rather than profit, personal ambition, or a misplaced competitive rather than a cooperative spirit, answering the basic needs that enable men to live, to hope, to thrive, the masters augment our efforts by sending their energy.
Most urgent is the access to enough food and water, as well as shelter, but also help with education and training, which can take many forms, access to medical help, and even programs that enable people to meet, to talk, to share a meal, and simply enjoy companionship. These efforts often develop into broader community efforts, which in turn, if successful, become blueprints which inspire others. Many people are stretching themselves beyond their own circle at this time, and the results, whether grand due to very generous donations or developing from modest beginnings, are bringing joy and genuine relief, even in the middle of a serious global pandemic.
So the task of salvation is evidently a collective and cooperative one, not one that Maitreya and the Masters of Wisdom will accomplish on their own. This aspect may be difficult to accept for those awaiting a saviour who will save us single-handedly. The realization that we must help and act together for a change to happen and for the creation of that new country is indeed sobering. Maitreya adds these encouraging words, "Take heart, my dear friends. All will be well. All manner of things will be well."
Just how much responsibility rests on our shoulders is something Maitreya clarifies in his third message, which goes, "Mine is the task to lead and guide, but you willingly must follow. Otherwise, I can do nothing. My hands are tied by law. The decision rests with mankind." When Maitreya speaks of the law, he refers to spiritual law, which he must abide by. In this case, what is clear is that he offers help, but we must act. The image some may have of an all-power savior working by himself is not accurate. Our cooperation really is required. We matter, we can contribute, and in this way build a new world.
Gently but persistently, Maitreya encourages us to understand how we can work with him. In message number 116, he says, "My brothers, the world longs for love, for the manifestation of brotherhood and justice. Help me to create in the world that blessed joy. Take your place at my side and work as never before. Help me, my friends, to create a pool of love so deep that all men may quench their thirst. My teaching is simple. Justice and love, sharing and peace will bring men to God."
Aside from asking for our help and offering his help in many ways, Maitreya has also created these messages as mantras. This means that when said aloud, they invoke his energy. In effect, it is possible to benefit from this, whether you feel this energy physically or not. I was unaware of this when I was translating Benjamin Krem's first book, titled The Reappearance of the Christ and the Masters of the Wisdom, into Spanish. I remember feeling anxious to find a way of retaining the particular qualities of these messages in the translation. And to this end, I said them aloud over and over again in both languages for the better part of a day.
In the afternoon, when I had completed this task, I suddenly burst into tears. I wept so deeply, I felt as if my heart would break. After I had recovered somewhat and feeling both puzzled and astonished, I phoned Benjamin Krem and explained what had just happened, wondering about the meaning of this. He said, "Oh, it's not surprising. You have been saying Maitreya's messages all day, and therefore you have been invoking his energy too." I can say without hesitation that his energy can be described as the energy of love. Not just any love, but something powerful, direct, extraordinary. I know of no way of describing it other than as divine love.
Maitreya's view is that it is our natural birthright and is an expression of our God within, our divine self, which is our true self. It is our task to express it through our words and actions, and his to help us in this endeavor. It is not possible to do justice in one article to the range and depth of all the messages which were delivered in this way to the general public. But I think it is appropriate to publish here at least one of Maitreya's messages in full. It offers those who may not have access to the book, which contains all of them, and the book is titled Messages from Maitreya the Christ, a chance to read and perhaps to say aloud and to ponder the meaning of Maitreya's words. These messages seem to speak from the divine in him to the divine in us.
And now for one of Maitreya's messages. It's actually number 123 from the 23rd of April, 1981. "My dear friends, I am happy indeed to be with you once again in this way. My plans proceed with success. My hopes are being fulfilled. My emergence under law takes place and all is well. The crime of separation, of division, of lawlessness must go from the world. All that hinders the manifestation of man's divinity must be driven from our planet. My law will take the place of separation. My law is the law of love, of brotherhood, of justice and truth. Know these things and follow me."
My law will succeed, for the law of love emerges from the being of God and thus cannot fail. While I am with you, I shall show you wonders of which you cannot dream. I shall show you the nature of God in a new way. I shall remove from your hearts the fear of death, the fear of life itself, the fear of your brother and yourself. I shall help you to put behind you that ignorance and to walk with me in the new light. I seek your help for these tasks, my brothers, for naught of worth comes to man but through his own efforts. Thus has it always been.
Take my hand, my friends, and I shall take you to a new country in which your true nature as gods shall flourish, in which all men together as brothers shall work out their dream of life. Many await my coming with some fear. Nothing but good shall grow where I tread. My promise stands. I shall reveal to you the nature of yourselves and God. I shall show you that for all men life is blessed. I shall create among you a pool of love from whose waters all may quench their thirst.
My heart shall speak for your heart, my tongue for yours. The leaders and the people will respond, and all shall be made anew. Take heart, my friends, I am here among you. I come to serve you, to live with you and to love you, to lead you and guide you. Look no more to the dark. My blessings go with you all. May the divine light and love and power of the one most holy God be now manifest within your hearts and minds. May this manifestation bring you nearer to your true nature as gods.
And now we move on to another article, which is actually called Women Working on the Front Line, and that's been written by Fumzile Miambo Nakuka. The COVID-19 pandemic has caused a crisis reaching far beyond health, challenging fundamental aspects of the ways we have previously arranged our social and economic structures. It has amplified existing gender inequalities across and within our society, exposing millions of women to increased risk of infection, violence, economic devastation, and poverty, and threatening to reverse hard-won progress for gender equality. Women earn less, save less, hold less secure jobs, and are more likely to work in the informal sector with fewer social protections. The decline in projected poverty rates for women has reversed and now points to an increase of 9.1% due to the pandemic and its fallout. I call on the G7 leaders to implicitly recognize this and ensure that their COVID-19 response intentionally, strongly, and permanently redresses these long-standing inequalities.
By 2021, around 435 million women and girls will be living in extreme poverty on less than $1.90 a day, including 47 million pushed into poverty as a result of COVID-19. Closures and mitigation measures have stopped women from earning, especially affecting the 740 million women globally with informal and precarious jobs that largely underpin the formal economy. Overall, women's employment is 19% more at risk than men's, and while the pandemic will impact global poverty generally, women of reproductive age are disproportionately affected.
Fiscal stimulus programs must be targeted to women. For example, by expanding the reach and benefit levels of social assistance programs such as cash transfers and social pensions, women in the informal economy must be supported to access cash transfers or unemployment compensation, especially those without access to banking. Bailouts and support measures should include micro and small businesses where women entrepreneurs are relatively more representative, with tax breaks for women-owned businesses and support for women's businesses and supply chains.
Already before the pandemic added teaching and nursing to a woman's home care duties, women were doing on average triple the care work of men, with little time for earning. With school and work closures forcing so many families to stay home, the unpaid role of women in sustaining care and domestic work has never been so apparent. Immediate steps are needed to prevent reversal of the gender equality progress achieved in recent decades, particularly regarding women's participation in the labour force. G7 leaders can direct childcare programs and economic stimulus packages towards recognising unpaid care work as vital to the formal economy and address the gross gender imbalances in its distribution.
Globally, women make up 70% of the frontline workforce in the health and social sector. They are the doctors, nurses, midwives, cleaners and laundry workers working in the eye of the storm to care for the sick and keep communities safe, often in the lowest paying jobs. Poor and marginalized communities are more vulnerable to COVID-19, yet have less access to care. With health systems stretched to breaking point, all women, especially those already marginalised, risk being unable to access critical medical care, including sexual and reproductive services and mental health care. G7 leaders must take account of these differential factors, prioritise the needs and protection of female health and social workers, and protect all essential health services, including for pre- and antenatal care and family planning.
Care must be taken that the digital divide does not compound existing inequalities as government services and education move to online platforms. Almost half the world's population is still offline, with girls, women and other marginalised groups among the least likely to have access to technology. Essential cash transfer programs implemented in times of crisis cannot reach women with no online access when those payments come as digital transactions. Girls cannot complete their schooling if they have no internet. Affordable access to the internet must underpin digital solutions.
In countries around the world, government authorities, women's rights activists and civil society partners have indicated increasing reports of domestic violence during the crisis and increased demand for emergency shelter. Violence in public spaces and cyber violence targeting women and girls are also growing. Disrupted social, police and social and justice services are exacerbating delays and difficulties in accessing support. The prevention and redress of violence against women must be a key part of government's national response plans, including the immediate designation of shelters and helplines for women as essential services with increased resources, sensitisation and maintenance of police and justice services, and stepping up advocacy and awareness campaigns, including targeting men's domestic roles such as he for she at home. Hashtag. By taking a strong female-focused response to the COVID-19 pandemic in every national response plan and every recovery package and budget, G7 leaders have an opportunity to help create the inclusive, equal and more resilient societies we need, not just to mitigate pandemic impact, but to build back better. And that came from the source of unwomen.org, which is reprinted with permission. It was actually published in the G7 USA, the 2020 virtual year.
It looks like we have time to read out a letter to the editor from the January-February 2021 issue of Share International magazine. And it is titled Giving and Forgiving. And it goes, Dear Editor, one day during the winter of 2005, I was walking towards the shopping centre nearby when a 50-year-old lady, clothed in a red baggy long coat, asked me for 50 cents. At the time, that small amount of money seemed so ridiculous that I thought as I was looking for it that I would give her a bit more, as she would not go far with 50 cents. And she said, 50 cents, madam, you're so kind. Usually, when I ask for 50 cents, people don't give me anything at all. They think I am rich because I'm nicely dressed. But you're so kind. Your heart's in the right place. One can sense that. I was astounded. We were outside in the wind, and she was congratulating me for 50 cents. She carried on and told me that her life had been very difficult. She had been placed in the south of France at a man's place who had abused her. Her family had more or less abandoned her with her daughter, and she had had to flee to escape her jailer. I tried to comfort her, telling her that she should try to forgive, but that I understood her suffering. Then she said, Oh, madam, it's our families that harm us, but you're right, one needs to learn to forgive.
I suggested that I could give her some clothes, as she seemed to lack of everything. Her answer surprised me. She thanked me but refused, saying she did not need any clothes and that they would embarrass her more than anything else, as she lived in youth hostels. She had had tears in her eyes when she talked about her family, and now her face was radiant. Eventually, we went our separate ways. I was under the impression that our conversation had been essential, and I had been very touched. As she was leaving, she waved towards me, saying, Goodbye, with a high-pitched voice, which really contrasted with the seriousness of the conversation. I am still pleased today to have met her. It was cold and dark, but my heart glowed with joy. And this was by a lovely person in France. Benjamin Masters confirmed it was from the Master. It was the Master Jesus.
Thank you very much for listening in, and wishing you a lovely week. Goodbye.